Hello.
Hello.
Hello, so I think we should get started because people are already thinking that I'm muted, but yeah, I was just waiting for people to join. But I think now we have 2 minutes past start of our meeting, so we can start. As always, we will start with announcements, and then we have two main agenda items for today. The first is an update on the number generator. We have a guest here, Martina Tomulla from the HBZ Library Network in Germany. And then Christine and Ryan will present an update on the item sort order plans. So I don't see anything for announcements, but yeah, does anyone has something to announce on short notice? Okay, then let's move on. And hi, Martina.
Hello.
Hi. I will stop sharing so you can take over the screen and start with your presentation and demo.
Thank you. Okay, then. Thank you for this agenda slot, and let me first share my screen. Just a second. So I do hope you can see the drop down as well. If
Yeah.
not, please. Yeah, perfect. Then I shared the right one. Okay, so I would like to show you today the number generator functionality and how to set up sequences, and talk a little bit about preconditions for using number generators in Folio or our number generators, and of course, as final step, then the actual use of a number generator and generate a number. So I was here almost or more than a year ago. I presented our plans at that time, but now today I can demo the whole workflow. And before I forget this, for inventory, it is available in Sunflower. Apart from FastAd, this will be the item barcode in FastAd will be for Trillium. So let me just start with a little project overview. This project is funded by the University Library of Leipzig. K-Int did the development work and Leipzig did some integration work at the end. And what are we talking about or which fields? So we do have the accession number, call number, and item barcode in inventory. And this applies to receiving as well. So they're the same number generators, and you can use them from inventory and you can use them from receiving side. And we do have the code in organizations and the user barcode in users. So those are all working with several sequences, and you choose a sequence and then generate a number, but you see two more. You see open access and serial management. They use it quite differently. They use this approach, but however, you have one sequence and those or the numbers will be automatically assigned as a record ID, as a number ID, so request number, pattern number. But they all use the same approach or the concept of those number generators. So I am right now in Eureka Snapshot and settings service interaction. And service interaction is designed to have more functionality in future. But what you see is number generator. We started in the UI with the number generators. The dashboard is using the backend of service interaction, but the dashboard does not need settings here. So you see number generators. And this is a wonderful overview of what number generators are available. And for those who are managing those sequences, how many sequences there are already defined. So you know this is Eureka, this is Snapshot, so those are all examples here. But this is a wonderful overview for those who are managing then the sequences. So, and I'm going into the number generator sequences here. And the first thing you would do is to select your number generator for which you would like to define, create sequences. So what is a sequence? A sequence is an incremental number, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's counting, and you have the opportunity to do prefix and suffix. And if you like, then do a check digit. So this is a sequence. And as the first precondition, you need at least one sequence per number generator you would like to use. So of course, you need a sequence and a pattern to create numbers, but you can have more than one. And in our case here, I choose now the accession number generator. In our case, seven examples are already in here to show you a little bit what you can do with sequences, how you can define sequences. Normally you would start fresh with no predefined number generator or sequence. We do have one example. When you have your installation, you may see one example, so please delete or change. When you start new, then of course you will create new sequences. And this is the same modal or the same window as the edit view, so I will show you this in edit view in a moment. So, and as you may know, those tables in Folio, you can click, for example, on a name, and then you have the fourth pane opened or displayed with all the details of this sequence. And of course, there's an action button on top, and you can edit or delete the sequence. So I go into edit mode here to explain you a little bit about what you can do, what you can define, and to explain those fields we have in this window. And again, this window is the same as if you would do new sequences. So first of all, we have the name. This is actually important because you will search by name or by code when you use the number generator then in inventory. So in this case, we put in here the prefix, since this is probably clear to the one using the number generator then, but you can choose names or a combination of both, like the prefix plus an explanation, a short explanation. Maybe as an explanation from users, you could say this is for external users, this is for staff, this is for faculty. So you can use those names there as well. We do have a code field, and as you see, we are in edit mode. It's deactivated. That means that you cannot change it. Why? Because this is the identifier of the sequence. So if you choose the sequence, then this is the identifier that Folio knows which sequence you selected. So you cannot change it afterwards, but you can, of course, search by it. You will see later on at the end. Then we do have a wonderful checkbox here enabled. So enabled sequences are those who are active, who can be selected from, who can be generated from, except they are at their maximum value, so they don't have any numbers left. But those sequences you can use to generate numbers from. So, and you can disable those sequences. And if you do, then they will be hidden and frozen. So you cannot select them anymore in the UI. Here, of course, yes, in settings to enable them again. But they will be hidden and frozen. And when you enable them again, they will continue counting. We do have the option of to delete sequences here in the actions menu. So there are use cases for both. You can delete, you can disable. If you're in doubt, I recommend disable first. You can all then delete later on. So this is the functionality behind the enable disabled sequence. So we'll skip the node field and come right to the sequence settings. Those are four fields. They are not mandatory, but of course you can use them. So the first field is maximum value. So in this case, for our accession number, it's 5 digits long. So the incremental number is 5 digits long. And if you use the maximum value field, you need to fill out the format field down here. So that's why there is an asterisk and it's mandatory. The format field is for the option for padding numbers, so the zeros in front, the leading zeros in this case. And then you need 5 zeros here. If you choose not to have those leading zeros, then you would use the hash sign, the number sign. And 5 of them in this example to match with the maximum value. And then you would not have the leading zeros. Another field is the warning threshold value. This again isn't, you can use it, you don't have to. And you see in this example, it's slightly below the maximum value. So when this sequence is reaching this number here, then you get little hints, little warnings that there are only a few numbers left and you may need to take some action. Even you need to have a new sequence or a different solution. Or maybe for those librarians, they need to go to the colleague who is managing those sequences. So we see later on at the end those hints. So then it might be clearer. And then we do have the next value field. And usually you would start with one as the next value, the next number which is generated. But you can also use this as a starting point, like if you used the sequence before, for example, and you already had the numbers 0, 1, 2, 4, 8, then you would use this with a 9, so the next value. And you would choose this as a starting point. So this is a four-digit next value, and we do have five digits for padding. So the next value would be the 0, 1, 2, 4, 9 in this case for the incremental number. So these are the sequence settings, and I skip for now the checksum settings since I come back to this when we talk about barcodes. But you can use it, of course, for all numbers if you would like to, but usually the use case is barcodes. So I go to output settings, output template. This is actually where you define how your number will look like, how you generate your number, or how the number will be generated. So you see a prefix here. Until there, and you see a token, and this token generated number is in this case the 0, 1, 2, 4, 9. So the next value in combination with the format field. And of course, this will increase over the time of use. You can, of course, do a suffix, for example, and type it in numbers or letters, for example. So this is a more easier example of how to set up a sequence. So easy here because no checksum setting. So, but yes, so I will go out here, canceling this window, and I come back to this wonderful table again. As you see, we have seven examples right now, so you probably don't need a search, but if you think about call numbers, they could be quite a lot, accession numbers as well. And then you may want to search. We do have a pagination of 25, so then you can, of course, previous and next buttons there as well if you have more than 25 sequences for accession number in this case. We do have a search box on here on top, and you can search name field, code field, node, output template. By default, it's name and code, but you can check the others as well. And here you have a little bubble where you can see how many results are found. So in this case, seven, because they are all displayed. We do have two filters. One is the enabled filter, and this is all true and false. And I will switch to false in this case because I have one example deactivated, disabled, to show you later on that it is hidden. And we have a use it status filter here. And those are the little hints I were talking about. So in this case, this sequence is at maximum. You see, it's over the maximum value here. So it is still enabled, but you cannot select to generate numbers from because there are no numbers left to generate. And the other hint here is the over threshold. As you see, it's the maximum value. And here the next well will be 96. I think threshold was 95. So then you get a little warning here. And when you use those over threshold sequences, then in inventory, then you get a call out at the bottom as well to let you know that there are only a few numbers left. So of course you can sort those this the, by this column and so on, and I would go into the other sequences, for example, call number, just to show you. You would then set up your sequence for call number if you would like, and for item barcode as well. And here I will go into this example, And I will go into edit mode again to show you and to tell you a little bit about the checksum settings here. So if you would like to have a check digit, you can choose one out of six methods here, with, for example, Loon, the most popular, I guess, or the best known. So you can choose them, and they differ as so many other methods, with the wait, or waiting, with the direction right to left or left to right, with the checksum calculation, then mod 10, for example, or mod 11, and how the remainder is then calculated. So they differ, and you can choose those six, one out of six here. And then we do have another field, which is called input template. And you see the token generated number here. And this generated number is, of course, the next value in combination with format. In this case, 05682. And this number will be used with the method chosen here to calculate the check digit. So the input template is for calculation purposes. And then you would, of course, go to an output template again to see or define how the number will look like at the end. So in this case, we do have a prefix 8, which is not included in the calculation, for example. Then we do have the token generated number, the 05682 in this example. And then we do have another token, and this is the check digit. So the checksum token will display the check digit, which is calculated in the combination of input template and method. So this would be one example where the input template is only the incremental number for calculation. But I can show you a different one, for example. These are all examples, so to show you how flexible we are or what you can do with setting up sequences. In this case, we have a longer prefix. So the three, for example, is for item barcode, and then there is, for example, a library code or kind of like a number. And in this case here, in the input template, the prefix and the incremental number, in incremental number, next value in combination with format field, will be for the calculation. So the whole number here will go into the calculation. And this example, it's Loon selected. So you can add your prefix in the calculation. And the input template and output template are separated. So you need, of course, to display your prefix. You need to repeat it in this field. Then you have the generated number token and the check digit token checksum. So this is an example where you have a prefix in the calculation. And then we could go into another example. Here in the input template, you have a prefix and a suffix, for example, for the calculation. And in the output template, you see you have a prefix, 7 in this case. It's not in the input template, it's not included in the calculation. And then you have this pattern, which is included in the calculation, and of course, the checksum digit. So these are all examples how flexible you are. If this is, of course, useful, or things if you're not putting the 7 into or not into the calculation, this is a different story. So, and then we see another example, and there you see that the 9.3 as a prefix is included as well in the input template in the calculation of the check digit as well as here in the output template. So this is actually precondition one. You need at least one sequence for each number generator you would like to use. And then I would switch to settings inventory. And scroll down a little bit, holding in items. And here you see number generator options. And precondition two is you need to enable your number generators, those you would like to use. And you see four drop-down menus here. So you are very flexible. You can choose one, you can choose two or three or all four of them. And by default, they are off. So at least once, if you would like to use number generators, you go in here and enable them. And then if you don't change your mind, then this will stay and you don't have to worry about it. But if so, you can actually then correct your selection here. So we do have two options for enabling. So the one is field editable. You are very flexible with this. You can type in manually. You can use the number generator. You can add to the number. You can delete the number or parts of the number. So you're very flexible. And the other one is not editable. So you cannot delete the number. You can only use the number generator. You can do the number generator again, so a new number, but only through the number generator. So there are both use cases for both. And I would choose this one and let, well, not editable. Maybe this is more for barcodes. I will choose now all of them and to show you the difference between those two options. This one I will show you later on. This is a nice feature for those who needs this. So save, of course. So this was precondition two. You need to enable the number generator. And then we do have precondition number three, which is actually permissions or capability sets for Eureka. So you usually need the regular appropriate permissions in inventory. So if you would like to add items, you need those permissions. If you edit items and so on. But to use the number generators, you need an extra permission, and this is for using the sequences. And you can find which one it is in all the documentation on the documentation website, docsfolio.org, or in the Folio Wiki, there is a page as well. So precondition three is permissions, capability sets. And so I will add one item here. And as you see here, you see three buttons. And of course, I enabled all four selection and settings. So if you only would select the accession number setting for the number generator, you only would see one button and not the other two. But I selected all of them. So you already see that we had two different selection for the dropdown. See, barcode is deactivated and accession number is activated. So then you would click on the button for accession number. And then you get a modal with the search box. And in this case, five examples. So why five? We had seven in the table. So one is missing because it is deactivated and you cannot search for it. It's hidden. Okay, and the other one is actually the one with at maximum. And if you check this checkbox, then it will be displayed. You cannot select it, so you cannot generate numbers from because there are no numbers left. But the use case here is if, for example, I used this sequence, let's say 3 weeks ago, and I'm searching it today, and I said, well, it's not there. Why? Well, in the meantime, it reaches its maximum. That's why I cannot see it in watch or search it. Only if I have the checkbox. So it's for informational purposes. And we do have another checkbox, which is the exact code match. If you click on this one, you need, or this search is the exact code match. If you would like to use this was a requirement from libraries, but so. And as you see in bold, it's the name. Next to it, it's the code. You can search by name and code. Then it's the next value. And you get those little hints here. This is at maximum because it's selected here, or this one over threshold. Yeah, only a few numbers left. So, and then you would choose, well, you would search or choose or search and then choose your sequence and generate a number. And then you see here the prefix and the incremental number. And you can add, for example, because this is editable. So then you could generate a barcode, for example. And we had this example, for example, and you generate a barcode. And then you see the incremental number with the prefix and the check digits, the three in this case. But you cannot add to this number because we selected it in settings that it's not editable. And of course, we generate a call number just to generate all three of them. And then I need to fill out all the mandatory fields to save. So, and this is important because if you don't save the record, then you gaps will be produced. So the number will be saved in the fields when you store the record. Okay, I will go back into the settings area. I will show you a little bit about this one. So use the same generated number for accession number and call number. So you will actually use the accession number sequences, and the same number will be inserted in both fields. So I'll go back to inventory, add an item, and you see generate accession and call numbers. And then you have the same modal with the sequences for accession number. And then you can, let's take this maybe. So, and you see a little warning here down below because it's reaching its maximum. And you see both the number here is in both fields, accession number and call number. So, in this case, with the prefix and the incremental number is the 96. So, I will cancel it for now. So, it will be a gap. And I would like to add a holding just to show you that you can create a call number on holdings level. This is the same functionality, so you can select one and generate a number, but it's on holdings level. So, and when we go back into the settings area, you see holdings here, call number. And items call number, and you can choose either both, or you can choose one of them, or you're very flexible. And then, so this is all in Sunflower, and you can test it on Eureka Snapshot and Bugfest. But we have one more. This is actually I go into checkout and new fast at record. And you see the generate barcode here as well for item barcode. This is for Trillium. So the use case behind this is if a patron would, or you would like to check out a book to a patron, and this book does not have a barcode label yet, you can assign a barcode or a barcode number. I need to say we are talking about barcode numbers, not images, barcode numbers. And then item has a barcode and you can check it out. And then you can change it afterwards, maybe temporarily barcode numbers, for example. So this is usually there are two workflows. One workflow is you have stickers for barcodes, and of course you have the barcode image and the sticker. And the other one, the other way around would be you generate a number and then create a sticker. Or a label, which is, but this is out of scope for our project. So I hope I did not forget anything. And I think this is my little demo. And I did not pay any attention to the chat. Are there questions or feedback right now? Otherwise, please let me know in Slack. You can always give me a direct message or metadata management Slack. So, are there questions, feedback? Can I explain something more? Maybe.
There is no question in chat, but Laura says, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for the time slot and the time. Okay. Good. Then I will stop sharing if there are no questions.
Thanks,
Yes.
Martina.
Thank
Thanks
you.
for presenting. Okay, I think then we can continue with Christine and Ryan about the item sort order. The
Sure
stage
thing.
is yours.
Hey everyone. One moment while I share my screen. Here we are, and got a brief little slideshow to walk through to give you all an update on what we've been doing in relation to item sort order. So this is being worked on currently in two different features, one being UXProd 5462, owned by Spitfire, which is focused on handling the backend support of this and API support. And then UXProd 1625, old one that's been around a while, that's focused on the front end in the UI. So, yeah, we just wanted to give you an update on what we're working on, what we're envisioning, because we started working on this and have found it to be moving pretty quickly, which is exciting. So I want to make sure we get you all up to speed on what's going on here. So this slide here, I think I'll turn it to Christine to give kind of an overview of what we have going on here.
Thanks, Ryan. So as Ryan just mentioned, they are the two features where item sort order can be updated via the API or in the UI implementation. And this is supported by a new numeric order field that's in the item record schema. When implemented, when the module is upgraded, this sort order field will be automatically populated with the current sort of the existing items, which is by barcode, and then it can be updated from there. Additionally, if these numeric values have been stored in another folio field or perhaps in a previous system, and you're moving to folio, they can be then mapped to the sort order field. For newly created items, once they are created, they will be assigned the next number in the sequence, which again can be updated and changed. An important note that for this functionality on the back end, there is no validation for deduplication. So there's nothing that says I can't put two threes, for example. Right now, it won't recalculate the sort order for the subsequent items. Though there is support for the drag and drop, which will calculate the sort orders, which Ryan will show shortly. And I did put a link to the tech design for those that might be interested to see the approach that was taken, the existing APIs and the new API endpoint for batch updates. So Ryan's going to show us what this will look like on the UI.
Thank you, Christine. So, a handful of slides here, just walking through some mock-ups. So, first off, what I want to point out is we are leveraging the existing move items within an instance action. We found that that already supported general concepts that we're looking here for. So rather than implementing a completely new action, we thought it would make most sense to leverage this existing one. So, if you're in inventory, you're on an instance, you would click the move items within an instance like you normally would today if you want to move things from one holding to another. We're just enhancing that to make it so that you can reorder the items within a holding. So this slide just shows clicking on that action. Once we've clicked the action, we now get a slight update, as you would see today, where we have the little six dot icon where you can drag and drop an individual item. Again, today that's supported for moving from one holdings to another. But with this work here, we'd be enhancing it so you could rearrange the items that fall under specific holdings. This would also support the existing checkboxes that display today when using this action. So if you want to move multiple at the same time, that would be supported. So here it's just showing if we selected two. So if you see previous slide, we had 1, 2, 3, and we checked off numbers 1 and 2. And then we dragged them to go underneath 3. You can see here we now have 3, 1, 2. Once we unclick from to do the drop, you'll see they've been rearranged, the holdings order numbers back to 1, 2, 3. But I'm sorry, holdings item numbers to 1, 2, 3 here. So that's been rearranged so that you'll see the barcodes and all the other details change to, move to the next row in the list, and they automatically get the new order sequence number. And then to save it, we would use the existing action that we get today, which would be stop items movement within an instance. You click stop, and then it would return you back to the instance third pane view, non-edit, just view, and you'll see the items in the order that you had selected. And so one thing you'll notice is that there is this new column here for order on the left here. So you can sort by this, of course. If you wanted to switch to sort by barcode or status, copy number, any of the other ones, those are still available. And if you wanted to get back to your default order, you just use the clicking the header of the column as you normally would to get back to your default chosen order. And that's really the big gist of it here. And we are, as I said, getting rolling on this now and making good progress. So at this point, we are hoping to include this in the Trillium release. And we hope to have some UAT available for testing soon enough. Yeah. If there's any questions right now, I do see, I think, Sarah's hand up.
Yeah, hi, thanks. And you may have said this and I just missed it, sorry. So the order is now fixed. So if I go out of this record to a different record and I come back, these are the same as I now have put them. And if I have an ongoing order and so I receive another item, does it now, where does it go? Does it become number 7? Even
yes.
Though enumeration wise, it would actually, be 1.
Yeah. So for that example, what we'd expect if you were to add a new item to this list here, it would default to, the highest current number plus 1. So as your example here, if we have 6 and we add another, the newest one would become 7. And then if you wanted to rearrange that, you would then use the action to rearrange them further.
Okay, and so here we only have, so what if my, so we get journals where we have 1,200 items already and we get a new one. So we would have to go find it on, you know, next, 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 next. Like you would have to go find it and then move. Do you see where I'm going? I'm not quite sure how to phrase it. Like,
so if you have
how
like
easy would it become to make that then my 1021 number one?
Okay, I get what you're saying. So if you if you're working with something with a very high amount of items, like you said, serials are, and you have over 1,000, in those scenarios, what I would defer to would be to leverage the API to make changes of that size.
That's impossible. I mean, that is just not a feasible workflow type situation for most libraries receiving print periodicals on a daily basis.
Okay. Yeah, I say that because we're leveraging the third pane view here where you're not going to see all 1,000 items. You would have to page through. And so that does give a limitation to the drag and drop functionality. Whereas the API, you can make a call to say, make number 1001 into number one. But I'll make a note of that and we can absolutely look into what options we might have available to better support large scale amounts of items for rearranging through the UI. Because like I said, in the current view, we are limited to what the current third pane supports.
Right. And so basically you're saying that if there are multiple pages, like, you know, in my case, there's 100 on one page. And so I'm on page 12 or 13 even, then there's no way really to get it from page 13 to page one.
Right.
Because
not through
I can't drag
the
it.
Right. Not through the current drag and drop support.
Right. For this, I would also really suggest that then there should be conversation with the receiving app people, because that then would, like, is the order going to show in the receiving app, the order number, and would I be able to control, I mean, would that be something to look into for future, right? Development, obviously, to be able to control there that this should be number one now and everything
yep.
should be moved down, you know.
Got it. And Sarah, in your kind of scenario that you were highlighting, as you're getting, you know, new issues in for something, would you normally, if you were in charge of, you know, ordering your items in that scenario, you get a new issue in, would you normally put that straight to number one?
Well, I think the problem is more that over time, what happens, like if I already have 120 and they get, how are they going to be designated one, you know, 1,220, right? How, when this gets implemented, what becomes number one? What becomes 1,120? And then what do all my subs, how do my subsequent items fit in? So it's not so much that I want to make it number one, but looking at your example now, I would need to make it number one. Because if my volume 74 were now number seven, that would be really weird.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. And so to the first part, I guess I would say the expectation here for, you know, when this gets rolled out and order numbers are assigned at the gate, you should expect the order numbers to align with how the barcode sorting is today. Since barcode is the default today, we wanted to start from there and then allow people to rearrange as they like. And so you should see that connection there of
being
aligned
really
with the barcode order.
Right? Because that is, like, we never For things like that, you can't rely on the barcode. The first thing you do is you go to your items and you go over to enumeration or chronology and you click that button and reorder so that you can find, so that things appear in the correct order, because the barcodes are literally from four systems in different formats. And now Folio has its own new way. And, you know, so the item barcode sorting for that type of, when you're working with those materials, is totally useless.
Okay. And so do you think, because, you know, we have to start somewhere as a reference point. Do you think something like you mentioned of enumeration would be preferable if available? Because again, I guess it kind of depends on the kind of items we're working with here, but to use that as a reference point for applying the original order.
Yeah, I think all libraries will tell you something slightly differently, and not just the new display summary. But the barcode thing, I would feel, is probably like we must, at least around the item barcode field, we must all be in similar boats. That you know, for we've come through so many systems and different ways of doing the barcode that it, as a sorting mechanism, unless you're native now, if everything is native Folio, then that's one thing. But if you have migrated items in large quantities for a holdings, then the barcode is always useless as a sorting mechanism.
Understood. And I think that's part of what we're trying to, one of the use cases to originally triggered this to address it, was that barcode sorting just isn't going to work for most people as your default. So that's what we're trying, like you pointed out, that's what we're trying to want to get around. But I appreciate your feedback on those thoughts there of where do we start from when we're trying to just get this new order field going. Vivian, I see your hand up as well.
So I have a question, and then I had a second question. The second question kind of got answered, which was, will the order field itself be editable so that if I, like in Sarah's case, if I add an item and it's number 1001, but I need it to be number 51, I can then go in and edit the order once I've created the record. And apparently the answer is no, that's not a thing that is that is possible in this iteration of the product. But the actual question that I had is, will the new order of items be reflected in the locate catalog?
Yes, that is part of the plan here, that the order will be passed along to our tech so that it could be included in locate in the designated order that you've set within inventory.
Okay. Great. And I also threw a question in the chat. Can this slide deck be made available? Because I know I have a lot of customers that will be very happy about this.
Yes, absolutely. We can make this available for you.
Great.
No problem. Thank you. All right. And just think we got several comments in the chat to take a look at. Which, in the interest of time, maybe we could take that offline. And if there's any open questions that I didn't get to, we can touch base over Slack later if that works. Because there was another item I wanted to get to again, something Christine and I had been working on that we wanted to get everyone up to speed on and pick your brains on. So one moment while I change gears here, if that's all right. Did want to get everyone up to date on what we've been considering for how to support hiding staff suppressed instances. And so, you know, I know a while back, we had initially implemented an approach to this that applied a essentially a staff suppress no default to inventory searching via the URL, which we quickly, based on your feedback, which we greatly appreciate, learned that using the URL approach to apply this didn't really work well for your workflows, for going through inventory, making your searches in your browsers. It kind of turned into something that we initially proposed as an easy way to address this, and it turned into something that just kind of became a pain point. And appreciate that feedback. So we rolled that URL change back, and since then, Christine and I have been toying around with how best to get back to that goal of making it so that you have the ability to hide staff suppressed instances from users who don't need to see them. And what we've come up with here is an idea of leveraging a permission to kind of control this, which the permission is already in place from the last time we did this work that included that URL approach. So we thought it would be ideal to leverage this permission in this approach here, because it's already in place and we can use it as a jumping off point. So with that, I think I'll turn it over to Christine to get into a high level approach of how we envision this working going forward.
Yeah, I think you outlined the main points, but the goal when this was originally implemented in the set instance for deletion feature, there was a permission about being able to see the staff suppressed facet. We're going to utilize that same permission. So those that have the permission can see the facet. As Ryan mentioned, there's no default, so it could be toggled on and off. And then for those that do not have the permission, they would not see the facet, but they would, and they would not be able to see staff suppressed instances at all. So they wouldn't be able to toggle to see the staff suppressed instances. They just would not be there if they didn't have the permission to see the facet. Does that make sense?
Makes sense to me. Does anyone have any questions on this approach here? Again, I think we tried to make it pretty simple where, if, like Christine said, just to reiterate, if you have the staff suppress facet, I'm sorry, the staff suppress permission assigned to your user, then you will be able to see the staff suppressed facet and you will be able to see staff suppressed instances. If you do not have the staff suppressed permission on a user, that user would not be able to see the facet and they would not be able to see staff suppressed instances. So again, just trying to keep it simple and helpful is the goal here. So we put a link to this in the agenda notes if you want to take a closer look. We are hopeful this will is something that we can get rolling out as part of Trillium as well. And so that's something we hope to be testing in the near future.
So we are actually hopeful that we'll get it into
Oh, I'm sorry, I misspoke. We want to move it into Sunflower. That's right. Thank you, Christine. Yes, yeah. Sunflower to include it as part of a CSP. And also Trillium. Great. Okay, if there's no questions, I can stop sharing my screen. If you have any questions about this that think of, please reach out to Christine and I, and about either subject really, item sort order or staff suppress. You know, we're always available over Slack, and I appreciate you all giving us your eyes and ears for a bit here. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Ryan and Christine. We have one more minute. I think we have to update our PC update. Yeah, Leah Song, that is now also Jennifer. I will do that. Jennifer, is there anything you want to highlight from today's PC meeting or from the DI stick?
Sure. So today in Product Council, well, Dennis Bridges came to present on Mod Mosaic. So Mosaic is eventually going to replace Gobi. So the technical council has already approved the back end. They will approve soon the front end or the UI. And essentially, it's not changing any of the architecture. It just really enhanced the Edge API for orders that already exists. So, and it just offers more opportunity to work with the Edge API for orders. I think this is set for Trillium, I believe. There was some discussion of making this kind of a more general Edge API that, for example, a vendor could use. And so that discussion will go on. Acquisition SIG is thinking or will be thinking about doing a demo by Horasowitz, because I do believe they use either they've created their own kind of mod Horasowitz or they're using the general mod Gobi one. The mod Gobi and mod Mosaic can be used at the same time. And there you go. You can look at the details there. And this will be available for any customer that uses starting off EBSCO eBooks. Yeah. And that's it. You can read the data import because I know we're at time. So there you go. Finish with Product Council.
That was a fast one. Thanks, Jennifer, for the update. So we are 1 minute after our meeting time. Thanks for attending and have a good day. Bye then.
Thanks everyone.
Thanks.
Have a great day.
Bye.
Bye now.